Welcome to The Urban Complex, a system of interrelated, emotion-charged ideas, feelings, memories, and impulses. This name takes the definition and lays out what a listener should expect. A podcast where ideas, feelings, and memories collide, leading towards meaningful change. I'm co-host Chris Richardson. Please enjoy the journey with The Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
Welcome to The Urban Complex. All opinions by Chris Richardson, Dominic Papa, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Arizona State University or Amazon Web Services. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for any decisions. Any endorsement of or messages from sponsors are solely supporting the production of this podcast. There is no further relationship with the podcast purposes than the sponsors unless separately created with another entity. Enjoy The Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
All right, Chris, happy new year, my friend. Here we are, 2022, Urban Complex. What's top of mind?
Well, I am a little bummed. We had a cancellation, so we haven't been on here. Feel a little rusty, but you know, a really important person in my life taught me about this word of the year thing. And it was interesting. Kind of regret the word I chose last year. More importantly, because I'm not that patient. I just probably should be choosing patient, but it's interesting. You kind of create this theme and you pick a word and that kind of sticks with you and you kind of keep it to ground. And I found a really interesting one that I wanted to share. So this is my way of making it public. It's a weird word. So it's called sang-froid. S-A-N-G-F-R-O-I-D. And it's one of my Achilles heel. Every once in a while when things are tense, I might react. And it's the whole word means composure or coolness, sometimes excessive as shown in danger or under trying circumstances. I just think it'll be a good way for me to really de-escalate and keep cool as amazing things happen. So that's my word.
That's awesome. We'll have to, we'll put it on the newsletter this week because one, can't spell it, so we'll have to
exactly. Tell everyone.
But no, I agree. So okay, so that's what I'll do next week. I'll come up with my word of the year. I like that idea.
Sounds good. Cool. Well, you got some big news. What's top of mind for you?
Yeah, you know, after what 9+ years of really, you know, driving innovation and government and smart cities and smart regions from the public sector side, I'm actually going to join the private sector side. So AWS, Amazon Web Services, just asked me to help be the U.S. lead for the cloud innovation centers. So there's these centers that are centered at universities all across the country to help really solve the most pressing challenges facing those communities. So we have one at ASU.
Yeah, we've heard of our cloud innovation center and had Jason on.
From Jason Whitaker.
Congrats, man. Going to the dark side. We're going to celebrate.
I love it. It's private sector, but it's working, helping the government and the university, the other public sector partners innovate faster. And so I'm excited. It's everything we've done in Greater Phoenix, now hopefully scaling it out across the country through Amazon. So really excited to join. And here's even the better part. The first cloud innovation center from AWS was at Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo, where I played soccer. But also there's a huge regional initiative, just like we're doing here in Greater Phoenix with the Connective. There's a regional initiative called Reach that I've been involved with since its inception through our partners at Deloitte, Steve and Josh over at Deloitte. And I'm really excited to have Melissa James, who's the president and CEO of Reach, which is the nonprofit organization helping to run the regional initiative. So really
Everything
excited.
Everything comes full circle, huh? You played soccer there. That's our guest. You're working at AWS. You'll be out there.
I'm sure people listening think, okay, this was planned. We literally did not plan this. I don't know how this all comes together perfectly, but I'm really excited to have her on the show. Should we bring her in?
Let's do it.
All right, here we go.
Support for this episode of The Urban Complex comes from Worldwide Technology.
What if we could connect people to new possibilities, turn thinking into a way forward, solve problems before they become a problem, and share the future with everyone? We can. At WWT, we connect businesses to technology to make the impossible possible, to reach better decisions faster, to accelerate progress. Together, let's make a new world happen.
Melissa, please let Dom and I give a warm welcome to a podcast, The Urban Complex. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Good to see you both.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
It's gonna be fun. We found that the best way to for our audience to get to know the guests is just start. Tell us about you, which we know. What's your background, and we'll get to your current role with Reach soon. So,
sure. So Melissa James, I'm the founding CEO of Reach. But I'd say a little about my background. I've been working at the nexus of, I'd say, policy, business, community for the better part of the last 15 years. Spent some time working in the state legislature. I lived up in Northern California. Spent some time working at Cal Poly. Was a part of a founding team for a think tank called the Institute for Advanced Technology and Public Policy. And then for the last, call it 7-8 years, I've been working in more community-based organizations doing economic development, advocacy before kind of what I'm doing in my current role.
That's awesome. So, I mean, Melissa, I know we're going to jump into Reach, and I love it because we're both regional collaborators, but this is a Smart City podcast, and one of the running jokes we have is asking every one of our guests, what do you think a smart city is? How do you approach it? How do you define it? Because we know there's no one true answer. So talk to us about your approach to smart cities. What do you think they are? How do you approach it? How do you work with them?
Yeah, so I would say, from my perspective, I think of it more as a smart region. It's probably, influenced a lot by the community in which I live and work in. But really for me, it's a lot about the connections and interconnections between a lot of diverse sectors and people and being able to come together for a common good and a common benefit. The way that that is deployed and applied in any particular community looks very different, but breaking out of silos, integrating and moving a whole community and a whole region forward.
That's awesome. Yep. I'm really excited about this conversation. So talk to us. What is Reach? Pretend like our audience doesn't know what Reach is, the geographic location of Reach. Give us a little background on Reach.
You bet. So Reach is, a regional economic action coalition. We were founded 3 years ago, coming up on February 1st. So it's a relatively new economic impact organization serving the central coast of California, which is defined by San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara counties. So we're situated about, 3 hours to the north or south of LA and the Bay Area. And the organization is really kind of a cross-sector organization of folks that have come together to put ideas into action for a thriving Central Coast.
And who are the major stakeholders in Reach? What would you say? Who are the founding partners that came together?
Is Oprah involved?
She's on our target list, but
she lives there, right? I think I heard that.
Yeah, she lives in the most southern part of Santa Barbara County. Yeah,
good info.
So does Meghan Markle and Prince Harry?
Yeah.
Oh wow. Yeah. You landed them yet? Cool.
Yeah, they're two on the hit list.
Target list.
Yeah.
So who is it? So did you pull in the university? Who's some of the stakeholders?
Yeah. A part of what's interesting about why this organization was founded, just 3 years ago, and I think it's an important part of the story. For us, it was the announced closure of Diablo Canyon Power Plant, which is now the state's last operating nuclear power plant, largest private sector employer, and really like a bedrock of the economy. And so when that announcement was made, it brought a lot of people out of the woodwork from education, from business, from government, from nonprofit or community-based organizations to say, what is this going to mean and what do we need to do about it? And there was a lot that took place to take that question and how the region came together to go about answering the what we do about it. But I would say, to get it over the finish line, it was kind of the Chamber of Commerce, Cal Poly, and really a small handful of prominent business leaders and a small handful of county and city leaders that came together and said, we need to roll up our sleeves and figure this out. And what that figuring out came to was we really need some sort of umbrella organization that is driving the economic future for the region. And thus Reach was founded.
What a great story how it started. So it sounds like it's very regional oriented, and those initiatives have become popular. Dumb's done a lot in our region with the connection to the others. Where is the focus? Like how are you coalescing that momentum and making Reach get the reach that's intended?
Like, yeah. So first, the conversation was started by, hey, we have a problem that we're going to need to solve. But as you bring more people to the table, we pulled back a little bit and said, let's make sure we know what problem we're solving. Is it just that Diablo is closing? And when you pull the lens back, it's, you know, actually, there's a lot of different challenges, but also amazing opportunities for the region that need to be harnessed. So for us, that all kind of culminated in what is called our Reach 2030 plan, which is a plan to create 15,000 good paying jobs by 2030, and a good paying job being 50,000 or above. And that unpacks to, you know, a handful of different initiatives. But that is really our, you know, our guiding.
So jobs is the main core. So it's the economic development of the workforce.
Yep. And the diversification of our economy, because losing a huge sector related to energy, both from fossil fuels, from nuclear. I mean, we have a very strong kind of tourism economy. It's a great place to visit. We have world-class wineries, you know, beautiful ocean fronts. But being able to bring in a diversity of industries and in aerospace and defense, technology, clean tech, advanced manufacturing, life sciences, that really was the future for the region to ensure that we have, you know, good paying jobs for the next generation. So that for us, it's about the next generation having the opportunity to live and work and raise their family on the Central Coast.
Yeah, so interesting. So as a president and CEO of Reach, with that backstory, like, how do you lead to get those outcomes? And if someone was listening that wanted to work with you, like, how they go about it?
Mm-hmm. That's a really good question. How do you lead to get those outcomes? Well, I would say, you lead from behind a lot of times. So you're not, you know, it's not an organization coming in and saying, this is what we're doing. It's, you know, coming in and trying to catalyze a conversation and get collective buy-in and try to move, you know, a community and diverse, you know, players in a direction. And that comes with a lot of thoughtful facilitation and engagement. So that would be kind of the way I would say that you have to really approach these things. It's being able to tap the leadership and expertise of a lot of different sectors and try to, you know, you have to be multilingual, be able to speak totally. Education, government, business, and try to translate and move people into a common framework and an action plan. And it takes a lot of time.
Because a lot of times it's not intuitive of how it would work, right? It's kind of a different conversation too. So sometimes it doesn't happen the first conversation, it's the second conversation. So how do you break it into goals? I mean, you talked about the really big vision, 15,000 jobs, but like, what do you see happening in 2022?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So we launched our Reach 2030 plan. It was all ready to go in March of 2020. So a perfect example of having to be nimble and adaptable. You have your North Star of where you're headed, and then you have to be able to be rooted in the facts and the grounds and the opportunities that are happening that exist. So we have four, you know, strategic priorities within our strategic plan, and we're moving each front forward, you know, in parallel. But I would say for the first year, we really have seized a couple of our large scale anchor projects because of the conditions that were happening at the macro level that we're lining them up. And so what I mean by that is we have the Western Range, the Cape Canaveral of the West at Vandenberg Air Force Base, and the future of space is a huge industry of national, global significance. And we happen to have an amazing asset in our backyard. And so we've been, you know, coalescing a huge group of stakeholders, moving that initiative forward. And then in parallel, what I shared, what was a major challenge of the closure of Diablo Canyon last nuclear power plant over the course of this last year, the federal government and the state government have designated right off our coast, one of only two places in California where offshore wind is going to be developed, 3 gigawatts of offshore wind. So it'll be, you know, a new source of clean, renewable power and a lot of economic potential of a new industry. So we have been focusing on some of these big picture, long range, high impact initiatives.
This is awesome. And I want to double tap on both of those initiatives, the space and the wind here in a second. But you know, Melissa, a lot of our guests are trying to start their smart city, smart region initiatives in their own areas of the country. Talk to us about, I mean, so the catalyst was the power plant closing and then you had people come together, but how did you get them together? How did you form the structure of Reach? I mean, you know, talk to us a little bit about how that came together. Cause I think people are like, development organization? Like, yeah. Talk to us about that. If there's any tidbits of advice.
Yeah, that's a really good question. What's the blueprint? It's kind of what you're asking. And, what it comes down to is, you know, it's nothing's cookie cutter, but there are some principles and best practices that I think can be gleaned from other communities and certainly from ours. And I would say, you know, you have to start somewhere and there's a bare minimum requirement to be able to take a first step forward. And usually that is, okay, who are the 3 to 5 people that I should be talking to, bringing together for this opportunity, for this challenge? And you have to start with a few and then merge out to build momentum and conversation. And one of the things that we've done, and I can give the examples of these particular initiatives, is it can be hard in this type of work when you aren't in control of all the variables. You don't own the Air Force or Space Force base. You don't have all the capital to invest, and you can have these, you know, big plans, but you don't control every variable. You have to influence key stakeholders and big bureaucratic organizations to go somewhere. And you can have these conversations and nobody ever knows what's happening and coming together. And so one of the things we've done that has been successful and creating a framework for dialogue and action is we have put together MOUs for our big strategic projects. So for Vandenberg, everybody got on board that there's opportunity here. We don't know how to get at it, but you know, whether you're the county, your local cities, you're the Space Force, everybody agreed there was opportunity. So what we did was we pulled everyone into an MOU that includes the governor's office, the county of Santa Barbara, the Space Force, Cal Poly and Reach, and Deloitte, who's been supporting us and a lot of the strategy and development. And we said, we see this opportunity and we need to uncrack it. And the first step we're going to take is we're going to agree and share that we're going in this direction. And we are going to create a master plan that is going to kind of outline the steps, roles, responsibilities. So that was really the first step. And that framework for Vandenberg proved to be a really successful kind of commitment document. It was publicized once we signed it. We also shared it with the world, which creates a sense of accountability and forward momentum.
I love it. I just wrote that down in my notes. I love that thought of a commitment document because you're right. It's a lot of these regional initiatives, it's so hard because you have universities, you have all these big stakeholders. And I love the point of you saying, we don't lead from the front, we lead from the back, because you have to, if the minute you try to tell them what you want to do, they're out. And so I love that piece of advice for everyone in listening in the audience is this: get an MOU, get everyone around the table, get them to agree generally on the concept, and then get that commitment document. I love that concept. I've never heard of that before. That's perfect.
The other part that's really important is a lot of times things can be based on personality and relationships, and then totally. People move out of their jobs and they cycle, and then you feel like you're back to square one. And it really needs to be organizational commitments if you're going to keep long-term initiatives moving forward. So I think about that for me. What someday if I'm not doing Reach anymore, I'm not working in this role, but I have all of these great relationships that are with me personally, and those leave the organization, that's not successful for future. You have to be setting up the relationships in a much more organizational context.
Gotcha. Sounds like you did it where people see themselves in the document, both in terms of their role and the accountability. And then if the change happens, you can live beyond the individual too, because you can bring others in.
And that happened because COVID was a challenge for everyone. And we had that, the MOU for Vandenberg, we had a big press announcement that was all going to happen on base, a signing ceremony in March. It was the day that everything shut down. So obviously it didn't happen, but the lead for GoBiz there's been 3 different leads in the last 3 years, but the organizational commitment has stuck through because it wasn't just about that person. It was GoBiz that was signing on.
That helps.
Then you're working within like a big bureaucratic organization. There's many different staff that we work with at GoBiz. The organization is committed to it. It's not just one person.
I think that's again, such a good piece of advice. Don't like, it's beyond the individual, the leader. It's has to be with the organizational and set it up with the organizational structure. That's awesome. Okay. So Melissa, you've touched on it a little bit. Let's talk about this Vandenberg Space Force base. Talk to us. What is it? What's the plans there? I mean, I think, you know, jealousy, we're in Arizona. We think we have a space thing going, but I know Vandenberg's killing it. Talk to us about what you're doing over there with space.
Yeah. And I would say it's, to me, you know, space is it's a rapidly growing industry. I think it's been like $350 billion. It's going to go up to $3 trillion in the next couple of decades.
Oh, my gosh.
Expansion, you know, all over. I think for us, you know, Vandenberg's unique in that it is, you know, the Western range from a national security perspective. And it's a place that launches into polar orbit, which is unique. So for us, it's what's the unique asset there and how can we foster, you know, more commercial expansion in that particular sector. So working a lot with commercial space companies to really lay out what are the infrastructure improvements that need to be made. What is it that you need? And that is what has gone into kind of our master plan. And when you think about, you know, we talk to a lot of the commercial space companies and the demand for launch far exceeds what the capacity is currently. Oh, there's going to be a huge infrastructure investment is going to need to be made as the industry expands.
Is that where SpaceX launches from?
Yeah. And they launch from multiple places, but yes, SpaceX launches from there.
Right.
Also, how's it been working with, obviously it's a, you know, base, how's it been working with the, you know, federal government? Are they excited about this? Are they, you know, opening their arms to commercial use cases?
That's obviously a really great question. And to get back at my point of, you know, not having it be with the individual, with the organization, there's also been three wing commanders that we've worked with because that's part of the organizational culture is that they're in that stint for a couple of years at a time. But what's been so impactful is that it's not like we're a small community organization that is starting up space. What we're doing is saying there's all of these macro conditions out there that are happening and the stars are aligning and we're trying to just best position the assets and resources we have to align with what's taking place on a much broader scale. So what I would say from the Space Force perspective, when we started this, there wasn't a Space Force, it was the Air Force. And Space Force has been created since then. And I would say it's really baked into national security strategy. They're focused on what they call the range of the future and recognizing the need you know, to invest in the infrastructure for space from a military side. And they're also really focused in the partnerships with commercial providers who are getting, you know, more payloads, you know, up into space. So those types of partnerships, and you're seeing all that contracting and whatnot taking place. So I would say the Space Force generally at the national level is very much committed to space. And certainly in our regional level, we, you know, we work with the base very actively.
How about on the wind side? So it's interesting. You talked about the closure of the nuclear, and nuclear has been such a hot topic for a long time. Obviously, you know, I know France has been a leader there. So it's unfortunate that America couldn't figure out the nuclear energy side. But you use that kind of catalyst to actually create a new space. I know Europe, especially Scandinavian countries do a ton with wind. What's the vision there, and how do you see that coming together?
It's a great question. And I would say it's another one of those ones where, you know, there is vision and priority being set at the national level. They want 30 gigawatts of offshore wind in the next decade. And then at the state level in policy, they've said we want 10 gigawatts of offshore wind in the next decade. So these are, it's a direction that the state and the national government are moving towards as they're looking for new sources of clean renewable energy. And so in their designation, it just happened that they carved out a place right off. Well, it doesn't just so happen. I should say that we have had state and federal elected officials representing our region that have been at the table for many years pushing for what would is now the designated call area for offshore wind development. So a lot of foresight that has gone on to really position the region. And so for us, you know, we're looking at 3 gigawatts of offshore wind, just to put that into perspective for you. It's about 399 square miles of kind of ocean territory that they will build about 300 large offshore wind turbines into what will be a big offshore wind farm. So there's a whole, you know, supply chain and industry jobs that are going to be developed as a part of that. And so for us on the Central Coast, you know, the things that we can do on the ground here is how do we position our infrastructure and our workforce to support and be a part of the, what will be a growing industry.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because I was Googling just crazy. 1 gigawatt is 3.1 million photovoltaic panels, or 364 utility wind turbines. So that's amazing.
It's
amazing.
It's a large scale.
Yeah. And that's one. So 30 is
one. Yeah. Intense.
Well, yeah, it's interesting.
Go ahead.
Well, just when you think about the technology, what we're talking about is, you know, very future oriented industries, and you know, they're at an inflection point where they're really going to take off. But it does take a little bit of foresight and kind of long range planning to.
Is Cal Poly involved in the research too? Yeah.
Yeah. So we actually partnered with Cal Poly. We have it on our website, and we did an economic impact analysis for the potential and what the benefit would be to the region, to jobs. And we worked with some Cal Poly faculty that did a lot of the research for that.
Well, hopefully this doesn't get you in trouble with Cal Poly, but if you want, our School for Futures at Arizona State University, I'm sure, has research doing this. I know one of the people there built BP China and wanted to give back because of the, you know, the offset of oil. But we can connect you if you want there.
Oh, yeah. Always love building more connections and partnerships and learning, especially ASU. There's so many very cool things that I watch that y'all are doing out in Arizona.
But I think what's so important about this conversation and this podcast is, Melissa, you said it, and I don't want to skip over it. It's, you know, to you, to the region, maybe, you know, this is very forward thinking. This is way out there. It takes an organization to help gather the stakeholders to go towards that vision. Without a reach in Central Coast, who's going to lead it? The university? No, they've got enough to do. The economic development? No, they've got enough to do. It takes an organization like Reach. So that's why, you know, Biden administration, if you're listening, it's fund the organizations like Reach, because they can bring the stakeholders together to achieve that big vision. But without a reach, it's someone's other day job, right? And it never gets done, yes, which is so important.
Well, and it's funny that you bring that up, because I just was reading a newsletter. I don't know if you follow The New Localism by Bruce Katt, but he was talking about this general concept about the building of capacity. And he kind of was saying, I can tell you, it's much easier to pass a big infrastructure bill than it is to implement it at scale, because you need the expertise, the capacity, and it, you have to invest in the ability to do these things. And so I think of organizations like Reach, but across the country, having the right types of talent and expertise that can, you know, jump into these gnarly, complex challenges, be able to think long-term outside of political cycles, but be able to work and step and operate within them, it's a hard thing to do. And it takes, it does take
research. That's a great segue into one of our standard questions.
Yep.
How can we help you do more? If someone's listening, maybe they can open a door, connection we have, we talked about ASU, but what help do you need to fulfill your vision?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I say we are always looking for partnerships. We're always looking for, you know, new insights. I think of things like what we're doing with the offshore wind development. There's a whole effort right now for reimagining what will be the future of Diablo Canyon. And it's a really interesting cross-section of community coming together for what is imagining of a renewable energy innovation hub and wanting to see something like that catalyzed. We need partners from across the world to create a global innovation hub related to climate change and desalination and renewable energy innovation. So I think about these big picture things that are happening on the Central Coast. We need kind of big picture, you know, partners that both from the private sector, but also from education and, you know, to help us make it happen.
Love it.
Is there anyone that you want to, that you're particularly appreciative of that you want to share and highlight? We know you can't do this on alone. And selfishly, if you think they'd be a good fit for being on the Urban Complex, we'd love to know.
You know, I could go on about a lot of different people, of course, but I will share one that I think could be interesting. And that is Cal Poly President Jeff Armstrong. He is a big picture thinker. And I will tell you that if Jeff Armstrong wasn't squarely behind what we're doing at Reach from the beginning, Reach would have never been born. So I would say his leaning into the community, his leaning in to, you know, supporting regional economic development, looking at what the university can do to activate a lot of these opportunities. He has been a prime partner, and he's one of those leaders that is always thinking around the bend, always thinking about, you know, big, big ideas. And I learn a lot from him, and I'm sure that you would enjoy.
That's a great suggestion. We're always open to the introduction. Chris,
isn't it so interesting? We had Dr. Crow, the president of ASU, and you're right. When they get involved in the community and they set the vision or they buy into the vision, it can move mountains. And it sounds like he's done the same thing up there that Crow has done here in this region. Wow. What a great suggestion. Thanks, Melissa. Appreciate that.
Yeah, and he's involved in Cal Poly as a signatory on MOUs, both for the two big initiatives that I've talked about. But even there's so many interesting things that are happening at Cal Poly and Amazon DX Hub, Cybersecurity Institute. They have an innovation or an accelerator. It's called the Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship. So lots of community-based private sector partnership that is really seeds a lot of innovation into our region, which is awesome.
Great. Well, thanks for all those insights. With that, the Urban Complex gives a big note of thanks to today's guest, Melissa James, President and CEO of Reach. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, you guys.
That was awesome.
The Greater Phoenix Economic Council, known as GPEC, was named the top economic development organization in the U.S. in 2020. As a data-driven regional organization, GPEC serves as a strategic partner to companies across the world as they expand or relocate to other markets. Over the past 31 years, GPEC has fueled the Greater Phoenix economy by helping more than 850 companies and creating more than 154,000 jobs. Leaders in Greater Phoenix are building the nation's most innovative and connected smart region through the Connective. This community-driven applied research model deploys technology at scale. For more information about GPEC, visit gpec.org.
Okay, Chris, Melissa James, I told you she's awesome, right? Reach is awesome. What'd you think about it?
Well, she kind of joked, oh, you want the blueprint? And she gave us the blueprint. And, you know, it's interesting. So you have a story that brings people together. You've got these, what'd you call it? The communication, the commitment document that brings that kind of highlights roles and what's expected. And then you publish it so that it keeps you accountable. And then boom, you know where you're going and you start breaking it down into work streams and look at the momentum. I mean, space, right? That's the future. Wind power, new ways of solving challenges for electricity. They lose an asset, but they turn it into a next gen asset. So I don't know. I just thought it was a great blueprint. And the path of how to do it and how you lead. And it was really good. All sorts of.
Yeah, you're so true. I mean, you're so true. It is the blueprint for how to be successful, I think, in the next generation economic development. You need an organization that can sit in a community that can drive these big picture visions forward on behalf of the university, on behalf of the city, on behalf of private sector partners, right? Because guess what? The city tries to do a space for space. A new mayor comes in, isn't interested in it. That just dies, right? You need those sorts of
reach organizations that sit in the community and could drive these big picture visions forward. And I think she hit on it. And this is what we've been talking about at the national level through that smart coalitions partnership with the regions coming together. You need organizations like that, especially for federal funding. Oh, you want to go do a, you know, $1 billion infrastructure project? City doesn't know how to work with the private companies, doesn't know how to work with the university. You need an organization that can actually execute and implement. What did she say? You think passing the bill is hard?
Yeah, exactly.
Implementing it,
implementation at scale is even harder. And totally. You need groups that's their mission that can catalyze people and get the next big thing in the queue too.
Yeah. So I think we'll see a lot more. It's like the connective. We'll see a lot more reaches, connectives, I think, across the country. So great. I love Melissa. I love what she's doing. I'm excited to see how she really helps transform Central Coast. Okay. Let's transition now, Chris. So it's been a while. Don't be rusty here. Cracks on the pavement. What do you got?
I found one that's just really interesting. And again, you think about leveraging your strengths, just like we heard from Melissa. This one's New York City's Central Park to become a climate research hub. I mean,
wow!
Think about a cool story. And it's basically saying it's going to get a closer look from researchers to assess how green space is used and how it's being affected by climate change. And so, you know, what a great way. It's right there in the middle. I'm sure there's tons of universities that have people that are interested in this. And it sounds like they're pulling together Central Park Conservancy, Yale School of Environment, and the New York City's based Natural Areas Conservancy. And they're calling it the Central Park Climate Lab. So really exciting news. What do you think?
Gosh, I mean, I hate to love New York. Like, they come up with the coolest things all the time. I mean, think about this. This is literally smart cities at its core. It's like, oh, we have this asset that is a park. How can we leverage a park to do innovative new research, new economic development initiatives? It is just so amazing. I absolutely love this, especially because, gosh, every city is thinking about climate change and, you know, air pollution and things like that. This is going to become the hub for climate research. Wow.
Well, and I know you're involved with Downtown Phoenix Association. They're looking at Hans Park and trying to make that be a nucleus. Maybe there's things we could do similarly and do it on a different microcosm.
I think it just shows city leaders across the world. It's not just a park. It can be whatever you want it to be, right? These assets that you have in your communities, a park is not a park anymore. It's a climate research hub. Like, what? That's exactly. Awesome. I love it. Well, great suggestion. We'll post it in the newsletter so that way people can read about it.
Right on. Feels good to be back. Happy New Year, everyone. And with that, that's a wrap. We'll see you next week.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to The Urban Complex, smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow. Please find us on where you listen, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. We do love your feedback. Let us know if you have ideas for guests or questions to air on Cracks in the Pavement via social media. The Urban Complex is found on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Or just shoot me an email, chris@theurbancomplex.com. Till next time.